built environment is trending toward an all-electric future. But to get to that point, there are several practical, political, and utility-related challenges the industry must overcome. Bureau Happold, a professional services firm that provides engineering, consultancy, design, planning, project management, and consulting services for buildings, infrastructure, and the environment, is currently involved with numerous all-electric projects. In this episode of the Percussive Maintenance Podcast, we welcome in Bureau Happold's Julie Janiski and John Swift to discuss how and why their firm ambitiously endorses an all-electric approach, the first steps your firm can take to embrace an all-electric future, some of the preferable HVACR technologies firms should consider, and much more. Julie, John, welcome to the broadcast.
Thanks very much, Herb. I'll kick us off with some introductions for Bureau Happold. We are a global engineering firm with offices around the world and numerous offices in the United States. John and I both sit in our Boston office, and given the content of the question we're talking about today around all electric buildings and in high energy use buildings like labs and healthcare, we've been doing a lot of work with the company in the US to spearhead some of the conversations around engineering buildings that can be all electric connected to clean grids. I am a partner at Bureau Happold and focus on integrated design and sustainability, either advocating for particular sustainability efforts at the scale of anything from a building to master plan to policy, in addition to leading large projects with many of our disciplines, building off the background that I have in architecture to help all of our engineers and architects work together to deliver really fantastic projects.
And thanks, Julie. And I'm John Swift. I co-lead the Boston office with Julie. I'm a partner with Bureau Happold. Been in the Boston area as an engineer since the early 1990s. I also am the global leader of our healthcare science and technology sector.
Great. Guys, as many Americans cook their holiday meals on electric induction stovetops, few will pause to imagine a future of all electric buildings. Julie, in a recent press release, you stated that not only are all electric buildings possible, they're a reality today in 2022, and in many cases, they're preferable. Can you fill us in on the details?
I would love to. And I should say that the work that we've done that's now published on our website is a really exciting first step to being able to share a good amount of research that's focused on not only all electric buildings in a cold climate with high energy use intense buildings, but multiple building types in many of the climate zones in the US to be able to demonstrate that all electric buildings are feasible in many of these locations. The conversation is certainly not just about greenhouse gas emissions. In addition to greenhouse gas emissions, we're spending a lot of time trying to make sure that the results and the solutions are resilient, both at the scale of the grid and the building, that we understand what technology is currently available today and has been either proven or is emerging, so that we can have conversations about what scale of technology, known or otherwise, is available for our clients, and then cost, to make sure that both from a capital cost and an operational cost, everyone's going in with eyes wide open to understand what the impacts may or may not be relative to all electric buildings. So those are the sort of top four categories that we've been looking at in terms of understanding how and where all electric buildings are possible. I think we're gonna circle back to this at the end, but I'll foreshadow to say some of the challenges aligned to that are definitely related to existing buildings. Very high intense use buildings with critical use occupancies and the cleanliness of the grid in each location. So in some locations in the US, the grid already has enough of a renewable supply that the greenhouse gas factors work out and the emissions are lower and can be lower for an all-electric building. In some locations, that's not yet possible. So being able to understand where we are today and where we might be in the decades to come and how that functions with the lifetime of the building and the changeover of systems, et cetera, is one of the things that we think is pretty critical to having these conversations for buildings that are in design today.
Bureau Happold's multidisciplinary team just published a study on all electric buildings that allows for quote unquote aggressive decarbonization. How does your firm define aggressive decarbonization and why is it a necessity?
This is a really, it's a really good question and an important moment to also think about the types of words that we're using when we're thinking about climate action and all of the opportunity we all have to improve the quality of the built environment, the quality of our experiences, and still conserve resources and show up to the types of challenges that we're facing with climate change. So the notion of aggressive decarbonization from our perspective is really about aligning ourselves to the way in which the scientific community is thinking about climate change and the types of measures that are needed to be taken to be able to shift the direction of the built environment to not only show improvement over the course of the next few decades, with a lot of goals emerging around net zero by 2050. Some folks are backing that up to 2040, but that ultimately we can't wait decades to get there. We do actually need to start to see improvements in the built environment, reducing greenhouse gas emissions in the near term. So near-term decarbonization might be another way of putting it. But we do think it's a moment to be able to understand how much we can do now in addition to how much we can do in the future.
Great. To embrace an all-electric future, changes must be made at the utility level. What improvements will be necessary for the grid to support such increases in load?
You know, that's something that we pay very close attention to. You know, Julie mentioned earlier that, you know, the grid and how it is supplied is different than almost every municipality, right? And how clean it is, how reliable it is. And the reliability aspect of the grid is super important when it comes to all electric buildings, especially in cold climates. So that, you know, we're addressing this at the building level and making sure that if it's an all electric building, there's some way, whether it's through an emergency generator or a backup gas boiler that only gets turned on in, you know, some type of emergency where the grid is down for a few days and you want to maintain some minimal level of heat so you don't freeze the sprinkler pipes and the other water pipes in the building. It's really important to make sure that that level of resiliency is provided, or if it's not, it's clearly articulated to the owner what the ramifications would be if you did lose power from the grid. So it's, you know, we did a podcast last summer, now that is 2022. And the director of the DOE in Massachusetts was on, and she talked about in that discussion about how important it is that we start to coordinate with the utilities, and that the state of Massachusetts, for example, and every state needs to do this, starts to coordinate with the utility companies to understand how do you get to that cleaner grid over time and not lose reliability and not have energy costs become onerous, right? And so those are all discussions that are going on at multiple scales, you know, at the state and municipal scale, and then, you know, on projects, it's making sure that we understand how to deal with it now and how to deal with it 20 years from now.
Great. So we've talked about utilities, but what about on the HVAC side? Which HVAC specific technologies must be prioritized to make an all-electric approach work?
Yeah, so it's really simple in some respects because it's really all about heat pumps. And so what we're seeing as a pretty straightforward strategy, and not just one we're implementing, but we're, you know, we do design reviews for other firms and other projects, and we're seeing air source heat pumps being integrated into projects. And also we're seeing heat recovery chillers be used quite a bit on projects, right? So it's a combination of those two technologies, and then making sure that you have the right other parts of the system to supplement anything that you might have to deal with. So for example, air source heat pumps, when it gets to a certain level of ambient temperature in the wintertime, they start to derate, right? And so you'll want to make sure that you have some other supplemental heat source that can help with that derating concern. But in the end, it's really, we've really seen a great advancement in the technology of both the heat recovery chillers and the air source heat pumps. And I network with a lot of my colleagues at ASHRAE and I work at other firms, and everybody is pretty confident that, you know, that where we are right now is already getting us to a point that, you know, you can have an all electric building as long as you deal with the resiliency issues that I mentioned earlier. And the market seems super motivated to continue to advance that technology, especially in cold climates, because of the opportunity, right?
Great. Now, I know Bureau Happold is doing more than walking the walk. It's also talking the talk. Can you discuss a project that's embracing this all-electric approach?
Another good question, and always an interesting one, particularly in today's environment where almost all of the projects that we're working on at the moment are under a non-disclosure agreement. So we would love to share many details. I would refer everyone to the PDF that's on our website for lots of information and lots of details. But for this conversation, I think we could talk about a couple of the projects without naming names to describe how we've been attacking some of the details that we've laid out around the themes of technology, of greenhouse gas emissions, of cost, and of resiliency. For a number of lab projects, again, in the Boston region to represent a cold climate, what we've been finding is that the ISO New England grid and the Massachusetts component of that in terms of greenhouse gas factors is in fact at a point where an all-electric building today can show a small amount of greenhouse gas emissions reductions. And then that continues to improve over time, assuming that the states in the Northeast achieve the goals that they have for adding even more renewables onto the grid and getting to a zero greenhouse gas emission grid by 2050. That's critical to the idea of all-electric buildings contributing to decarbonization. We've been looking at the cost question quite closely in both office buildings and lab buildings. And on the lab side, I think it's really interesting to think about that type of project for all electric, because the perception is that it would be really expensive to shift to an all electric building. And what we're finding is that there is a cost premium, but it is quite small. So for a lab building, it's in the range of 1 to 1.5% of the construction cost for the building. And on the operational side of cost, it's for a lab building in the range of 4 to 8% of a cost increase per year, which is interesting because one of the things that we typically talk about is the cost delta between a unit of energy for electricity and a unit of energy for gas. And that's typically one gas to five electricity as a cost. So one of the common questions is, if that's the ratio, then why isn't it five times more expensive to have an all-electric building? And that comes back to what John was talking about around technology. The efficiency of the heat pumps themselves is what's driving down not only the utility cost and what your bills look like at the end of the day, but also ultimately the greenhouse gas emissions, because those two are intricately related. The efficiency of the equipment that we've been talking about could be described as, for every one unit of energy that you put in, there are a certain number of units of energy that you get out. And that is referred to as the coefficient of performance. Or efficiency factor for various pieces of equipment. A gas-fired boiler and an electric resistance boiler, for example, are just under a value of 1, which has always been considered quite good in terms of losses in the system. A heat pump can be up to 3 or even 4. So the difference in those technologies makes a huge, huge difference in all of the types of calculations we've been looking at. another couple details from some of the case studies that I've got in mind, in addition to greenhouse gas emissions and cost, include the question of resiliency, where we've been looking at predominantly two options, either shifting to an electric resistance boiler for backup only, to make sure that if the air source heat pumps have a problem in the cold climate, that it's a fail safe. And then therefore the fossil fuel generator would be upsized as a backup resiliency mechanism. And the other option that we've been looking at is maintaining a natural gas connection to the building and using gas-fired boilers as a backup for the heating system so that the fossil fuel generator can stay the same size it would have been if we had had the gas boilers in the first place. And those two options have so far come out to be about even for large building developments. So it ends up being a conversation that's more related to the availability of a utility connection, the preferences of the owner, the operations and maintenance implications, et cetera, and ultimately the availability of any fossil fuel to the tenants of the building, either office, lab, retail at the bottom, et cetera. And one of the other components in terms of details for case study that we've looked at is related to space planning. And understanding that shifting from, again, for a large building, a system that's using a water-cooled chiller, cooling towers, that we would be shifting to potentially a heat pump chiller and a small suite of air source heat pumps, and that there is some equipment that goes away that makes space for some of those things, but there is also a small additional amount of space that's required. Typically at the rooftop area to be able to accommodate for that equipment. So I think the case studies that we've been looking at are really trying to look at the question as holistically as possible. And one of the projects that we are extremely proud to be working on that I would love to shout out here is with WS Development in the Boston Seaport for One Boston Wharf Road. Amazon will be moving into that building. It's an office. The office component is 630,000 square feet of a 700,000 square foot building. And that Amazon office component is pursuing a zero carbon project altogether. So the building systems that we've designed are in fact all electric. And the tenant will be doing their fit out to match that. And the building ownership and the tenant have been working on the details of a virtual power purchase agreement to be able to show that the electricity that they're using is offset by the provision of new renewable projects onto the electrical grid, which is amazing. So I think Amazon, of course, is a big company, and that, you know, there's a lot of work that goes into it. But the more that we can target this on big projects, I think the more it makes it realistic and easier for it to become the norm in a lot of places.
Fantastic examples. Now, I know this transition will come with many hurdles. In fact, you sort of hinted at a few of them earlier, but can you list a few that may in fact throttle this all electric transition?
Sure thing. I think I mentioned a couple of them previously, which is really focused on cost. And while I said, and I will acknowledge that, you know, 1 to 1.5% is small, it does sound small, it can actually be a really big number. So the cost impact is definitely important and a significant component of the conversation. The resiliency of the system is extremely important and is something that we are not willing to do without in terms of making sure that a system is capable of providing the services and the experience of the building that is intended. A couple of hurdles that we've been working on more recently, I think, include the question of how this could get played out in terms of existing buildings. The work that we've done so far is mostly focused on new construction, including the study that we've published. And on the existing building side, I think that's where we start to have a lot more questions to back up to the utility question about how the existing electrical grid can actually accommodate the additional load. A new construction building, with some caveats and with some exceptions, but in general, a new construction building can be put onto the electrical grid without being a burden if it's all electric, compared to if it had used a gas-fired boiler. That's definitely not the sort of starting place for an existing building. One of the critical components of an all-electric building, again, particularly in a cold climate, is to reduce the amount of heating that we need to begin with, so that in the winter season, we're not overburdening the grid and therefore having blackout conditions like we do sometimes in the summer. And in the summer, it has become a life safety issue to not have cooling in some places. It would be even more of a life safety issue in the winter for power outages, and in addition to the types of operations and maintenance issues that could potentially cause. So in terms of challenges that could throttle the future, I think the resiliency of the grid and the ability of municipalities, property owners, states, et cetera, to be able to provide support to existing building owners to retrofit their building envelopes to significantly decrease the amount of heat that they need in the first place to then convert to an all-electric building is really, really critical. One other thing I would mention is the future of the gas infrastructure that we have in our cities. And if less and less buildings are using that infrastructure, how will it continue to be managed? At what cost? And how can we all try to tackle that together so that it's not on a utility by utility basis, but it's something that we could actually have hopefully a proactive plan for. And that's a huge question and a really complicated nut to crack. But the more proactive I think we can try to be, particularly at the government level, to understand that this is going to be a challenge for gas utilities and we can try to get ahead of it, the better.
How about for design engineers who are interested in embracing an all-electric approach? What's an easy first step they can take?
Well, they can read our study. I think that's the first step. I actually think, Julie and a bunch of our engineers across the firm in the U.S. worked really hard on that. And I think it lays it out in a very straightforward way. So a first step is to just see what other people are doing. And then it's to really talk to the rest of the design team about what the goals are for the project and how an all-electric approach would align with those goals for a project. And some projects it's the right fit. In some municipalities, you don't have a choice, right? And so when you're required to do it, then you need to go see what other people are doing that have already done it for a while. So I think do research on what other people are doing. There's lots of good ideas out there. And then just really understand the technology too. I think it's really important when you're designing building systems that you, as an engineer, stamping drawings, that you are super confident in the technology that you're applying. You know, we're really applications engineers. We take components that are designed by a lot of different engineers and designers from a lot of different manufacturers, and we put those components together to create a system to make, buildings operate efficiently and in a way that they're comfortable and healthy. And it's really important to make sure that you're comfortable and understand how you apply those technologies. So I would really emphasize that too.
Well, John and Julie, thanks so much for sharing your time and expertise with us today. If those tuning in are interested in connecting with you or Bureau Happold, where should they turn?
Excellent question. The website is Bureau Happold, BUROHAPPOLD.com. And if you look for either myself or John on that website, our email address is right there. So please feel free to be in touch. The The webpage for the PDF study that we've been talking about is under the banner of decarbonizing the built environment. So that's another Google search, either on our page or in general, and you'll find that PDF to download. That also has our contact information at the end. We would love to continue the conversation and continue the work. And if it's okay, a parting word would be a reminder of some of the top line priorities in the conversation for all electric buildings, building off of what John was saying. Number one, the impact the building and project would have to the grid. Number two, the level of performance of the envelope to reduce the amount of heating in the first place as we're transitioning from gas heating to electric heating. The design of efficient all electric systems so that they're as energy efficient as possible in addition to being electric. Number four, the notion of resiliency, both at the grid and at the building. And number five, ultimately, if we're looking at decarbonization and targets like zero carbon, again, with a priority to try to do as much as possible as soon as possible, then the quality of the offsets that we're looking at for our projects and with our owners is something that demands some attention so that we're getting high quality offsets with new renewable projects onto the grid.
Well, Julie, John, thanks again for sharing this information with us. We certainly applaud your efforts on behalf of the built environment, and we're looking forward to tracking Bureau Happold's progress from here. We hope you enjoyed our conversation with Julie Janiski and John Swift. And as they mentioned, if you're interested in connecting with them or Bureau Happold, visit www.burohappold.com. That's BUROHAPPOLD.com. The Percussive Maintenance Podcast is now available on Spotify. Show your support for industry journalism by rating and reviewing this podcast. Doing so will help us reach a much broader audience. Also, please subscribe or bookmark us so that you can enjoy all of our past and future episodes. We appreciate your continued support. And remember, if you can't fix it with your brain, you can always rely on a Swift Kick. We'll see you next time.